24, Willapa Bay Salmon Management Policy C-3622, briefing, public comment, and policy direction.
Here we go again.
Yeah. There's going to be another shit throw.
I know. So, in terms of the end of this thing, I was reading this letter from Barker suggests 99% sport and 8% commercial. That's 17. So I asked Don, your number is 18. Why don't we go with 18? Why are our choices limited to 14 or 20? And he says they don't have to be.
They don't have, we can pick a number.
So
17 and a half. 18. I don't care. But
do you think that was out of order? I'm tired
what
of
you said?
People, yeah.
No, no. I mean, not everybody's going to like what you said, but that's okay. You were correct. I mean, staff's important. I mean, they
get the shit kicked out of them.
They also, and I told the director, maybe you were in there, staff needs to be, there needs to be an educational process with the staff for the staff to have better acknowledgement of who their customers are. Mm-hmm. You know, and frankly, some of them need to have better insight in how to negotiate. I mean, Ron Warren's a nice man, but a technical. Remember when he was in with the Tribes, he was like a piece of hot butter. I mean, he's just milk toast.
I think it's all the fault of the purse seiners.
He knows the issues, but he's not a negotiator. Don't tell him to be that, because he'll be busy.
I'm just sitting there being smug. The answers. Your fault.
Knows the issues, instills no confidence in what he says. You know. I've
how do you sleep
a whole bunch of shit in my life, and I'm not saying that'd be better on than he is. But
well, that's one down there.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah. David, would you hand that to Miss Tammy for me, sir? Thank you. While you're there. When you're ready, folks. We have rooms in the back now.
Well, good morning, Commissioners, Deputy Director. It's a good day to be here on a misty, moist, rainy Saturday. For the record, my name is Kurt Hughes. I'm your statewide salmon and steelhead fishery manager. With me today is Chad Herring. He's our South Coast Fishery Policy Lead, and the subject that he's going to be speaking to today is the review of the Willapa Bay Management Policy and the plan or guidance for the 2019 fisheries development.
Thank you, Kurt. As Kurt mentioned, my name is Chad Herring. I'm the South Coast Fishery Policy Lead, and I'm here today to talk about Willapa Bay Salmon Management. My presentation outline, I'll talk a little bit about why a policy was needed, the basis for the 14% impact rate cap for wild Chinook, as called for in the policy in Phase 2. I'll present some options for commission consideration in terms of 2019 fisheries options and review the proposed timeline for the comprehensive review process for this policy. There were a few key issues that were raised that really delve into the heart of why a policy was needed. First, that was that some key stocks were not meeting their escapement objectives. So a policy was needed to enhance the conservation focus of fishery management activities in Willapa Bay. We were hearing a lot about frustration and harvest allocation from the recreational sector. So a policy was needed to provide guidance on reducing gear conflict and the sharing of impacts within Willapa Bay. And there was just a general lack of trust for the department's fishery management activities in Willapa Bay. So a policy was needed to help restore and maintain that public trust. Just to delve in a little bit more deeply on the key stocks not meeting escapement objectives, I have a figure here of Willapa Bay wild Chinook spawner escapement from 1980 to 2014. You can, with the goal there represented by the black line across that figure, for that time frame, those 35 years, Chinook, wild Chinook and Willapa Bay had only met their escapement objective 14% of the time. A similar figure looking at Chum, they've done slightly better, meeting escapement 34% of the time, and Coho typically meet their escapement goal until recently in Willapa Bay 88% of the time over those 35 years that we were looking at. Another issue, and just in terms of enhancing our conservation focus, was prior to the development of this policy, Naso River Chinook held the primary stock designation within Willapa Bay. I have a figure here of the stock composition of naturally spawning Chinook within the Naso River watershed. The green bars representing hatchery origin spawners, with the blue line representing natural origin spawners. As you can see, the amount of hatchery origin spawners on the spawning grounds makes up the majority of the naturally spawning Chinook within that watershed. And this was really due to lack of available infrastructure to be able to remove those fish that do escape the marine area and lower freshwater fisheries. In terms of harvest allocation, looking at, so the figure I have here is harvest allocation by sector for Chinook. This is total landed harvest within the bay. So from 2000 to 2014, the commercial sector had harvested about 69% of the total Chinook harvested within the Willapa Bay watershed. A similar graph for coho, representing the same number of years from 2000 to 2014, the commercial sector had harvested 88% of the total harvest of coho within the watershed as well. So just to go on to the basis of the 14% impact rate, here I have three graphs. These are outputs from the AHA model or the All-H analyzer. The All-H analyzer was an Excel-based model developed by the Hatchery Scientific Review Group for us to use to evaluate habitat, hatcheries, and harvest information to take a look at the future and what may happen by turning the dials on some of those different factors. These graphs represent the blue bars, spawning ground escapements likely to occur in 10 to 15 years under each of the different total harvest rate options that we looked at, 5%, 10%, 15%, 20%, 25%, and 30%. The red bar was the time frame for 16 to 21 years, and the green bar representing 22 to 27 years. So looking at the North River watershed, the Naso River watershed, and the Willapa River watershed, as it relates to Chinook, we really found through these modeling exercises that the harvest rate, based on modeling, needed to be at a 14% level in order to reach spawner escapements within that 16 to 21 year time frame. I did have a follow-up question from my last commission presentation done on conference call on February 22nd, and that was, what was the pre-terminal impact rate estimated during policy development? That rate was 35%, and that was meant to encompass both all fisheries pre-terminal outside of the Willapa Bay, so Alaska, Canada, our marine areas, and Oregon and California fisheries. So I've got a figure here that is a recent evaluation, done, a CWT evaluation done by our hatchery evaluation and assessment team. This pie chart is just a representation of all the CWTs recovered for brood years 2003 through 2011 for Forks Creek Chinook. The numbers highlighted in red there represent pre-terminal recoveries. So 26.5% in the blue, darker blue pie there, representing northern fisheries. That would be Canada and Alaska. What would be an orange piece of pie, if it was big enough to be a piece of pie, is that 0.2. So some of our CWTs were recovered in Oregon coastal fisheries. And then 6% in our marine area 1 through 4 ocean fisheries. Looking at similar data for the Naso River and the Nima River over a similar range of years, although not the exact range of years, CWTs were not released from the Naso River and Nima River in all brood years, would show that the Naso River experiences about 43.6% impact outside of the Willapa Bay terminal area, and Nima at 38.8%. So, also important to remember that in 2015, the CWT program was reconfigured in order to have tags, representative tags from each of the three facilities going out in each year. So, we'll have a little bit clearer look at this as we move forward in time. Moving on to 2019 fishery options, I think the first thing I would like to talk about is what do we have coming back for this year? So I have a small table there in the upper left-hand corner with our forecast, Willapa Bay forecast for 2019. Just want to note that the coho number there is still a ocean age 3 abundance estimate, and that represents the abundance of coho out in the ocean prior to any fisheries being enacted. So as we work through the North of Falcon process and ocean fisheries become more solidified in terms of what they'll look like for 2019, those FRAM modeling exercises will give us a number of Willapa Bay coho that they're likely to take out of this ocean age 3 abundance estimate, and then we'll work off a terminal run size that is somewhat reduced from that. Those reductions can, just in terms of what the ocean will take, can range from anywhere from 2 to 6%.
Yeah, maybe I are you talking about just in Washington waters, or are you talking coho all the way up? All the way up, okay.
All the way up, yes. So this would be the abundance estimate before Alaska, before Canada, before our marine areas. Once those fisheries get set, the modelers will give us a number of impacts that those fisheries will likely incur, and then we'll start our process with a number that's lower than that.
From a technical perspective, we create, like with Chinook and Chum here, we create a terminal forecast. And so that's what's coming into Willapa Bay. The coho number starts that way, and then there's an inflator, if you will, that basically takes it back to a January age 3 coho before 2019 fisheries would be applying harvest rate to that. So that's what that number represents.
Okay, thank you much. Commissioner McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As long as you're opening up questions as we go through this. So for chum salmon, that number of 51,400 would also be prior to any ocean fishing, but there isn't really any ocean fishing on chum, so that number would be pre-season ocean conditions as well, I presume. The Chinook number, that involves the possibility of interception in Alaska, Canada, and the PFMC areas. And I think in the Fish Committee meeting the other day, the question was, is this based on a cohort relationship forecast that presumes average ocean take? This is the number that would be coming back to the bay. So is that the right way for us to understand 4309? Is that presumes a historic normal ocean take that's been happening through the cohort base period?
Right. So the forecast for both of those are terminal area abundances. We provide that to the FRAM modeler in the case of Chinook, and that number is inflated to account for historic sort of recent year pattern of what those pre-terminal fisheries would look like in regard to the harvest rate. So if we go into the FRAM model, there's additional fish that are added back to account for pre-terminal fisheries. Chum, like you say, there's really little, if any, information on pre-terminal impacts on chum, but as you indicate, there is very little harvest of chum in the ocean areas.
Do you know what that inflated number would be rather than 4309, or is that still subject to deepen the model?
I'd have to dig into it, but basically those coated wire tag harvests that Chad spoke to earlier would be effectively the add-on back, that percentage of harvest rate. So it was, 35%? So it would be, instead of 43, it would be something closer to about 55 or 6,000, just a guess.
Okay, thank you.
Also, in looking at forecasts, I think it's important to take to look at this year's forecast just in terms of the relative recent year averages. So the blue bars there are for Chinook. You can see wild Chinook is forecasted a little bit higher than recent year run size average. The hatchery component for Chinook is down slightly. Really, that's just about the reconfiguration of hatchery production within Willapa Bay and the reduction almost of a 40% bay-wide reduction in hatchery production is implemented in the policy in 2015 brood year. For coho, both wild and hatchery stocks are quite a bit up from their recent year averages. And for chum, a wild stock up a little bit higher than recent year average, and the hatchery significantly higher than recent year run sizes. Prior to the policy in brood year 2014, we were releasing about 900K or 300,000 chum from each of the three facilities within Willapa Bay. Beginning in the 2015 year brood year, that number was increased to 1.5 million or 500K out of each facility. And just a note here, in 2018, we also took enough eggs to release a million additional Chinook on top of our chum. On top of our normal production in the NEMA basin. So in 2018 brood year, that would be 2.5 million chum were released. So in terms of the fishery management options that staff has worked on and I'm here to provide to you today, just a summary of what those look like. Model A will be 2018 fishery schedule on the 2019 forecast. Model B would be policy implementation as written in the policy, or implementation of Phase 2, a 14% impact rate cap for unmarked Chinook. That's Model B. Model C would be a look at continuation of the 2018 policy guidance. Some aspect of that was a 20% impact rate for unmarked Chinook. And Model D is a modification of the harvest control rules within the policy to meet this year's forecasts and issues. So a few things to consider here before we get into the overall management framework and the summary of outcomes from those modeling exercises. There's been some updates to the Willapa Bay Terminal Area Management Model, our preseason planning model. We would do this every year as we prepare for the North of Falcon process. Some of those updates include 2017 CRC data for both marine and freshwater recreational fisheries. What's new this year is with the 2018 creel estimate for the recreational marine area. First year we've been able to produce a catch estimate for that, so those harvest rates have also been added to the model in 2018 commercial fisheries data. On the upper right-hand corner there, I have a table of the recreational fishery impact rate for unmarked Willapa River Chinook. For 2015, 16, 17, and 18, keep in mind 18 is still preliminary. As we work to finalize that run reconstruction, we still have some sources of information that are outstanding. But you can really see a drastic range there in the impact in the marine area, with very high values in 15 and 16, really good fisheries those years. 17, not so great, and 2018 representing a pretty poor year for fishery success there in the marine area. Just a note here, too, that 2015 and 2016 were years of high abundance for the Columbia River for those Chinook stocks, and 17 and 18 were low years in terms of Chinook abundance for the Columbia River. We've talked before about how we have non-locals and locals that recruit to this fishery. Predominantly, those non-locals are made up of Columbia River stocks. A little less separation there in the freshwater, and you can see the total impact rate from recreational fisheries in Willapa Bay to Willapa River Chinook stock there in the far right-hand column. Another thing to consider is we've had the shift in hatchery production. Forks Creek had been producing millions and millions of Chinook for decades within the Willapa Bay Basin. Recently, with the policy implementation, that and some legislative action that took place in 2016, that Chinook production has shifted to the south end. So in the lower right-hand corner, I have a table there of the Willow Bay Hatchery Chinook releases by brood year. Those brood years 14, 15, and 16 would make up the majority of returns for the 2019 return year. With the 14s being the 5-year-old component, the 15 brood year 15 being the 4-year-old component, and brood year 16 being the 3-year-old component. Also, not just symptomatic to Willapa Bay, but across many other regions, we've seen our Chinook stocks getting smaller and larger, smaller and younger. And that's no different here in Willapa Bay, where we've seen that 3-year-old age class starting to make up a bigger and bigger chunk of the returning fish. Just in terms of the options analysis, we kind of took the tact as we were developing these options that we would maximize coho time for the commercial fishery and then start to build out from there with available impacts that were left remaining. It's also important to note that any given day of commercial fishing in any of the 5 commercial catch areas are not equal, even within the state, even within the same statistical week. So a commercial fishing day in Area 2T, the northern, more front part of the bay, would accrue a different set of impacts than if we were to fish it in commercial Area 2M, which is right out in front of the nacelle, very southern part of the bay. So those impacts are different depending on where you are. So there's many different possibilities in terms of scheduling this that might affect the results. So we tried to take a tact of using what those fisheries have kind of looked like in recent years in developing these model options. So in terms of the overall kind of fishery framework that was built into each of these 4 options, just kind of starting with some things that are relative to all the options. For unmarked Chinook, all fisheries, commercial and recreational, within Willapa Bay were modeled as mark selective, or for a release of unmarked Chinook. All the marine area fisheries and Marine Area 2-1 were modeled with a start date of moving to those Marine Area 2-1 rules on August 1. So, just delving into this a little more here for Model A. Once again, that was the base model. It's 2018 schedule with 2019 forecasted abundances. It was a 3 adult bag limit in the marine recreational area with only a 1 natural coho or one coho. In the freshwater, some areas of the freshwater had up to a 4 adult bag limit, mostly those sections below or surrounding hatcheries. And tangle nets were used in the commercial fishery in the south end prior to 9/15, and 2U, which makes up the commercial catch area, basically around the Ron Craig boat launch up to the 101 bridge, also used tangle nets all the way up until the chum window on October 15th. Moving down to Model B, you can see the harvest rate HR caps that were modeled in that. The recreational and marine area freshwater fisheries were modeled as a 3-fish bag. There was some tangle net time put into that model, south end of the bay prior to September 15th, and also into U through statistical weeks 38-40. That makes up the majority of time in September, bringing us right into the beginning of October, utilizing tangle nets. For modeled option C, that was a 20% harvest rate for Chinook and a 10% cap to chum. That was also modeled as a 3-fish recreational bag, adult bag. There were no tangle nets modeled in that fishery for the commercial fishery. And then Model D, which had a 2 adult fish bag in both marine and saltwater recreational fisheries. It did encompass some tangle net fisheries in the south end of the bay prior to 9/15. Also, there are 2 days in each of the last 2 statistical weeks in commercial catch areas 2N and 2M on the south end of the bay. So, with that, I will move to the results. So this table represents the outputs of all these model runs. Once again, Model A being last year's season on this year's forecast. The harvest rates from each of those model runs are listed in those the second, third, and fourth columns there. For all the model runs, none of those model runs would result in us meeting escapement for natural origin Chinook in the bay. They would meet escapement for natural coho and for our chum stocks. Moving left to right there in terms of policy priorities and moving into the expected harvest for Chinook, this would just be the harvest of hatchery fish, does not include any unmarked impacts, and these numbers do represent the expected harvest of just Willapa Bay Chinook. As I mentioned earlier, there are some non-locals. We have difficulty forecasting how many non-locals we're going to get in any fishery in any year. Also, the numbers in the recreational fishery are combined for both the marine area and freshwater fisheries. So for Chinook, those are just hatchery fish that would be harvested. For coho, it's a combination of both hatchery and wild origin fish. And then you can see the allocation proportions under each of those management options for both the recreational and commercial for Chinook and coho. I did not put any chum numbers on this figure. Chum primarily is taken by the commercial sector. While we do allow retention of chum in our recreational fisheries, very rarely do we get much significant chum harvest at all. From those CRC data. And the final column there is just a number of commercial days scheduled under each of those modeled options. So the last thing I'd like to touch on is the proposed timeline that we have for the comprehensive review. The row there in red represents where we are here today. Every line above that are items or meetings that have already been completed, either as public workshops, meeting with the advisory groups, or being in front of the commission here, or fish committee. Moving forward, we're looking at meeting with the Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Group in August to review a draft of the comprehensive review report. We will meet with planning on meeting with Fish Committee to provide a progress update of that report. And then moving into November, have another meeting with the Willapa Bay Advisory Group to go over the final report and give those folks a chance to review that before we bring it to the commission and provide a summary presentation and seek approval of that final report in November. So that's all I have for today. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One is a follow-up of the question about northern impacts in the Pacific Salmon Treaty Commissions. And this was a question from the Fish Committee the other day, but everybody wasn't there. So the after public testimony, the commission will be wrestling with a policy decision of whether to stay with the current plan impact rate of 14% inside the bay, or change it to something different. Last year it was 20% inside the bay. The new Pacific Salmon Treaty for 2019 reduces the catch of Willapa fish in the northern areas by some amount. And when the question was asked in the Fish Committee to translate that into terms that could be compared or added to the 14% or the 20%, I think your answer was 4.7% more impact rates would escape the ocean and move across the bar to be considered. So that's my first question, is if we were looking at some sort of attempt to try to figure out what would be conservation neutral to the 14%, would it be that we would add 4.7% and get the same amount of inside availability as what was presumed when the plan was built with the old northern interception rates?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner McIsaac. Yes, some calculations looking at the new Pacific Salmon Treaty Annex for 2019 through 2028, it looks to be at the likely abundance index. Abundance indexes, we could expect to see a 4.75% increase in escapement out of those marine area fisheries, mostly due to reductions in Alaska and Canadian fisheries. They make up the majority of our pre-terminal impact.
My next question is on table 12 or slide 12. And in the upper right-hand corner, you have the recreational impact rates from 2015 to 2018. It doesn't show the commercial impact rates or the total. And so I wondered if you could let us know what the commercial impact rates were in 2015, 2016, 2017, and particularly 2018, last year, when there was some special guidance in effect. I recall that you did come in and say we had a pickle that came out of the 2015 and 16 situations. But could you rattle off the numbers that would be able to fill us in what the commercial rate is and the total on that table?
Yes, I good. Thank you for the question, Commissioner McIsaac. So the commercial fishery impact to Willapa River Chinook stock in 2015 was 7.5%. In 2016, a 9.2%. 2017, 11.4%. And 2018, the preliminary figure I have now is 3.4%. Keep in mind that 2018 fisheries, we had an emergency regulation where we closed all commercial and recreational fisheries for a period of time at the end of September due to Chinook conservation and some environmental conditions, as well as conditions of fish that we were seeing and the numbers of fish that we were seeing at the hatcheries.
Okay, that was a low water, no rain situation.
Yeah, and we were seeing some real sick fish that were pretty lousy with ick, and we experienced some pretty high die off in some sections of Willapa Bay.
Thank you.
Okay. Commissioner Thorburn.
A real simplistic question. So as I look at the models that you've presented to us, we're not facing the pickle this year with the predictions if we went with the policy. Is that correct?
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Thorburn. That is correct. Last year when we were in front of you, we just had harvest rates for just 15 and 16, and as you can see, just the recreational impact to Willapa River Chinook was right about 15% there alone. Once we've got the data for 17 and 18, much lower years for success in some of those fisheries, we've seen that rate go down. This year, at a three fish, in the options that have a three fish recreational bag limit, we're estimating the impact to Willapa River unmarked Chinook at 7.3%. And at a two fish, the model option D that was a two fish bag limit, that estimated impact rate would be 6.3. And that's just based on these recent years' harvest rates, as well as the proportional abundances of all those stocks, Willapa, Nacelle, and Nima, to each other.
Whether or not there would be a pickle to be faced in 2019. So last year it came in much less, and part of it had to do with the no rain, no opener for the commercial folks. The marine area dip-in situation is always up in the air a little bit. So when I looked at these numbers, where if I add them together, we were over 20% in 15, over 20% in 16, over 20% in 17, under 10% in 2018. I wondered if 2018 was just an anomaly due to lack of dip ends, low water, who knows what, as opposed to some level of certainty that we're not going to be in a pickle again. And so could you speak a little bit more to that?
Yeah, thank you for the question, Commissioner McIsaac. I think 2018 was a few different things. One, the environmental conditions that you that you spoke to were prevalent. It was a real tough year for Willapa in terms of water flow and water temperature. That likely produced some changes in habitat utilization and fish movement that we would normally see in a normal rainfall weather situation. Another aspect of that is due to some of the non-local impacts that we've recently been accruing, and as we've got a better handle on stock composition of that marine area fishery, in the northern part of the bay, there was a Willapa Bay control zone enacted where some of the very front part of the bay, Washaway Beach, where we feel most of the non-local impacts are occurring, was closed from August and early September. And that was really a conservation move to protect Lower Columbia Natural Chinook that are being pretty heavily impacted there. I don't think we have a real great handle on stock composition of that fishery yet, as we're trying to assess it with genetic material. We've gotten a bunch of samples out of the commercial fishery. We've got some out of the recreational fishery, but the numbers are pretty disparate in terms of how many samples we have. So I think we've still got some work to do in understanding stock composition. We're applying some aggregate data to account for that year to year in our run reconstructions, but I don't think it gives us the resolution quite yet that we would really like to have. So I think those factors, the control zone, the environmental conditions, as well as the emergency regulation closure, all had an effect on the harvest rate that we're estimating and seeing here today.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, one last one on the ocean interception question again. You answered it to the north. In the Pacific Council fishery area, there's three options out now. You know what those are. Back when the policy was adopted and based on presumed ocean interceptions, the decision was to use a 20% inside rate for a while and then a 14% impact rate starting in 2019. It presumed some level of ocean fishing in the south as well. Knowing what you know about the Chinook numbers in the Pacific Council arena right now, would you say that the ocean interception in the southern area is average, lighter than what it was presumed to be back in those old days, or heavier than what it was expected to be in the old days?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner McIsaac. I would say it's about average. Really, the majority of our pre-terminal impact, as the pie chart that I showed earlier, occurs in Canada and Alaska fisheries. Our marine areas 1 through 4 do have an impact, but it's a pretty small bite compared to where those fish are impacted all the way through those fisheries.
Last notice, if anybody in the audience wanted to make a public comment and you haven't filled out a form, you should probably do so. I have a question. Pretty heavily impacted there. What does that mean? You talked about Washaway Beach and you said it's pretty heavily impacted there. Tell me what that means.
Well, I think it for when we look at genetic material coming out of each of those areas collected through the recreational fishery or through the marine or commercial fisheries, specifically for 2T, which would represent the area where most of that recreational fishery occurs and commercial fishing in that catch area, that's really where we see the highest impact and our highest composition of non-locals. As you move into 2U and some of the other areas of the bay, those percentages drop off rather drastically.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Keogh.
Yeah. Thanks, Chad, for the presentation. And so look at the two tables, 13 and 14, you know, looking at the different options. Can you just tell us what the different options would look like in terms of expected PHAS for some of the different hatcheries? You know, that's part of our, you know, one of the concerns or one of the issues raised in our policy. Just is there a way to kind of yeah, like some options are really good for PHAS and some are really bad, or maybe they're all bad?
Thank you for the question, Commissioner Kehoe. While I don't have those specific numbers prepared and ready today, what I would say is the more hatchery Chinook we remove, the better off we're going to be from a PHAS perspective, just looking at that metric and that metric alone. For the Willapa River, the hatchery, as we have moved from 3.2 million, excuse me, to a release of 350K, I would expect to see Willapa River PHAS really start to come down drastically beginning this year, as long as those age compositions continue to hold. For the Nacelle River, regardless of what option we decide here, I would expect the Nacelle River PHAS situation to get worse. We know what it's been, a wide range over the last few years when we've been releasing 800,000 Chinook out of the Nacelle River. Beginning in 2016, we started releasing 2.5 million. Given the amount of harvest and our constraints here, I would think that that PHAS issue is likely to be the same, if not higher, in future years.
Okay.
Again, morning, commissioners. Thanks for your time. I guess I'm going to testify to what I see as the truth. May not be what everybody else sees as the truth, but I look at this policy as an allocation policy. I don't look at it as a conservation policy. We've been in this fight for 4 years or 6 years or however long we've been in this fight. I, for one, am tired of it. And I don't know how, I'm sure all of you are all tired of it also. I don't see any end coming in what we've written down on this piece of paper when you guys did this policy. And I know you worked hard on it, I know everybody worked hard on it. But it is not turning out the way we thought it was going to turn out. We've been cherry-picking things out of it and changing things in it since it's the start of it. As I look at our commercial fishery through this thing, the Chinook part of it has been wiped out for us. I don't think there's any, you know, we've done some alternative gears. Yeah, we've gone out and caught a few fish. We haven't made any money at it. And I think that should be the part of a terminal or a fishery when you get done at it, as any business as you've run, you want to make some money at it. We can't make any money fishing alternative gear on Chinook. That's just the facts of our fishery. I think now you've gotten to the point where, and we didn't discuss much today, the Willapa River is going to 350,000 fish. I believe you're going to see your marine sport fishery disappear. I mean, it's going to get absolutely hammered. your in-rivers work fishery in the north end of the bay is going to go away. That's what this policy has done. I believe we need to look at Willapa Bay as a terminal fishery. We need to raise fish. We need to have a policy that we don't have to come here and fight with you. We have more meetings on Willapa Bay stuff than we do on the Columbia River. The point of this thing was to not have an ESA-listed fishery. We're meeting, and this group that's sitting behind me is the same group that we're meeting with six times, seven times, eight times a year. Willapa Bay should be managed in a two-hour meeting. How did last year go? Predictions for this year? Set the season and be done. We're coming up here and testify in front of all of you, spending your day. I mean, it's gotten out of hand. We don't do this for an ESA-listed Columbia River fishery. So I'm asking you, as we go forward in this thing, let's make a policy that looks at Willapa Bay for what it is, not for what we want it to be, not for some dream that we think it should be the Columbia River or some great river that goes into the mountains with cold water, lots of water. We don't have those things. We don't have fish that come back when we have conditions for them to survive. That's where we are. That's the honest truth. We talk about the anomaly of, oh, the water got warmer this year. If you look at the facts, every year the water's getting warmer. The water's getting less. But yet we think some magical thing is going to happen, and these hatchery fish are going to become, you know, spawn in the natural, become naturals, become wilds over time. I just don't see it happening. I'm tired of coming here and testifying. I'm tired of taking your time. I'm tired of the fight. Let's make a policy that says what Willapa Bay really is. And that's a bay where everyone should be able to go fishing. Everyone should have a share of the fish and not an allocation fight, because that's all we have here. Thank you for your day. It's fun being there.
Greg McMillan here. He stole my thunder with a lot of stuff, so I'll make it short. I think he's correct in a lot of what he said. You know, this has just become a food fight, as Commissioner Holtzmiller said in Spokane. You know, we got to get along at some point and, you know, have a fishery. You know, and right now is the Willapa is a chum, and it's a coho system. It's not a Chinook system. Let's just raise some fish, increase these hatcheries, where you have a commercial and a recreational fishery, because right now we don't have a commercial fishery. It's gone as far as a profitable industry. You know, the recreational's going down the same path. It's going to happen this year. It happened last year. So the only way to right that ship is to raise some fish, and I think we all got to raise fish for everybody, including the whales. So, you know, it's a pretty easy fix in the Willapa. So. Yeah, that's about all I got. So, take her away, Steve. Yeah.
With this year's forecast on coho and chum, does that not appear to be economically viable for the commercial fleet?
To a point, because we are restrained in the Chinook numbers, to where we don't have. Historically, we've never been able to catch. I mean, you've seen it on 88% of the time we've made escapement. We can't possibly catch. Coho are fish. They get by our fishery all the time, fishing 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. They've historically always gone by our fishery. So, you know, where we have with the coho right now is we're hamstrung by our Chinook numbers, and then on the backside, our chum numbers. You know, so it shortens our season, and, you know, it really cuts the days out that we can participate. And you know, when the weather changes, when we have weather change, fish move on the weather change. And if it's not modeled into the day that we can fish, if we're only fishing 3 or 4 days a week and they come in on the other days, they go right by our fishery. So, you know, that's where we get hamstrung.
Thank you for the explanation. Steve?
Chair Carpenter, Commissioners, and Director Susswind, my name is Steve Gackey, and I am a recreational fisher from Nacelle. My wife's great-great-grandfather homesteaded the Nacelle Valley, and many of my relatives have river frontage on the Nacelle River. My father-in-law, Millard Pentala, deeded the public access along the Nassau River below the Highway 4 bridge. He believed that everyone needed a place to fish. I served as the advisor for the South Bay and the Nassau River during the public review and adoption of the current policy. I did not support the policy then, and I definitely do not support it now. The current policy is not working. Willapa Bay is a unique watershed. No tribal or ESA issues. The commission has an opportunity right now to restore this once great fishery. I'm asking that you repeal or modify the wild salmon policy and the HSRG and promote a hatchery-based salmon system. Raise more fish, everyone will have more fish. As someone that served on the school board for 10 years, I just need to thank every one of you for the time that you put into this. I get the commitment that you make to our resources, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, guys. Okay, next three are Ryan Gray, Francis Estalila, and Lisa Olson. Ryan, you're up.
Ryan Gray, commercial fisherman. Commercial fish in the Willapa for 12 years, Columbia River for 12 years. Fish over in Young's Bay currently. The whole policy, I think, has to change. I think the biggest thing, at least that I see, is the predators, cormorants, all that. Just watch them mow down all the smolts, and then the sea lions and the seals, getting them on the way back. And so if we don't raise more fish, it's not going to work. And this is my paycheck. I got to, you know, put food on the table with these numbers, and it's not really good. So,
when you're talking about predators, Ryan, you're talking about in both systems, Columbia and Willapa, I assume?
Or? Yeah.
Okay.
Columbia probably worse. That's all I have.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Francis, good morning.
Good morning, commissioners. Can you hear me? I just wanted to make a couple of comments. I didn't have prepared comments, but just taking notes from what's been said already. I'd have to agree with Mr. Lance Gray. We have not let the policy just go as written. We haven't implemented it that way. There have been lots of tweaks each year. I would say the overwhelming majority of those tweaks have been to help make the commercial fishery more viable because of their inability to access Chinook. I would say that the results of those tweaks have, for the most part, been to end up over our target exploitation rates in three out of those 4 years. 2018, Commissioner McIsaac pointed out, was the only one that actually ended up within the policy guidelines. And the tweaks that we made stayed within the 20%. I personally support the 14% out of discipline. Let the policy run as it is as far as the impact rates that are there. I mean, I get it. We need to conserve these Chinook. This isn't the greatest Chinook basin, and it is a challenge. But, you know, if we can't save wild fish here, we can't save them anywhere, okay? This is the place where we can do it all. We have total control to make it happen. I wanted to address Commissioner McIsaac's question about the extra 4.75% escapement out of northern fisheries. That's not additive. Mathematically, you can't just take the 4.75 and tack it on and say we're going to manage for 24.75. Nor can you say we would manage for 18.75. The extra escapement, if we fish at the same rate, by the function of math, will have us fishing on more fish. even if we stay at the same rate. If we stay at 20, there's going to be more fish available, and we'll put a 20% exploitation rate on those. If we fish at 14, there will be more fish available, and we'll be fishing on that surplus. So it's not necessarily that we have to transfer an additional 4% of impacts in there. So I want to make sure everyone understands that mathematically. The low flow. Again, I'll agree with Mr. Lance Gray. That low flow is not an anomaly. We've got climate change. This is going to be the new normal. It will be a huge challenge trying to create a meat market Chinook factory in three little creeks, basically, that when the fish come back, they're in low flow, warm states, and those fish are always going to be potentially in peril of pre-spawn mortality. As a physician, public health person, you start putting any creature into high-density situations, nursing homes, daycares, a little bit of virus goes in there, and bam, it's everywhere, okay? And that's what happens to these fish. They're extremely susceptible. I'll finish off with just one comment about the North Bay fishery. Yes, it is dying. And like Lance and Greg said, it's because we don't have the production at Forks Creek to support it. We've cut that by 90%. There is Chinook available to the south. I think the only two things you can do to help that fishery come back, the wreck fishery come back for Chinook, is to bring the production back to Forks Creek, flip the primaries, or start to make the investments to gain more access, more infrastructure to get the sport fleet down into the south of the bay. That's a little contradictory to the intent of the original policy, which was to create a recreational fishing priority in the North Bay and try to segregate the two sectors and not have the gear conflict. But that's the predicament you're in right now. I think the better way to go is perhaps to flip the primaries back. And I don't say that easily because I was one of the proponents that said do it this way to try to get the fish through and not have the primary population at the end of the gauntlet after everybody's had their chance to take a whack at them. So I'll conclude there. Thank you.
Thank you. Lisa?
Good morning. Thanks for having us all here to testify, and thank you all for what you do. I'm one of the county commissioners in Pacific County, and I'm not going to try and pretend that I know all about the percentages and all the technical details. What I do see is a lot of our business is dying. The fishery is the business sport. Is part of the business climate also. There's the people that just come and bring their boats and bring their fishing poles and things, but there's the charter and the this and the that, and there's the commercial fishermen. And those are the people that stay in county, and they donate to our fundraisers, they pay their taxes, they shop in our stores. Those are the things that we need in our county to keep going. And just on a kind of a overall basis, I think being at the county commission level for a couple of years, it's become really clear to me that there's very little common sense in state government anymore. There's this department doing this, there's this department doing this, and there's this department doing this, and they don't seem to communicate on things like that. The timber affects the fishery, the DOE, the things that DOE does affect the fishery. It would be really nice to see representatives from the different agencies working together rather than working against each other. I don't know that that's in your purview or not, but it sure would be nice to see other agencies have to take some accountability for maybe their impact that is really kind of overseen right now, or not seen. Anyway, I'm not saying this very well, but I really appreciate your attention to this. It seems like just if we could put some common sense in there and let the people that know what they're doing try and make this fishery work. It used to be a vibrant, vibrant estuary, and I just think we're ruining it. And I agree with the fishermen. I think this policy has failed, and I really hope that you take a look at it and try and make the changes that will help us to get back to having a vibrant fishery in the estuary. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McIsaac.
Yes, thank you, Mr.
Chairman. Thank you for your testimony. I just have one comment relative to the mathematician, Mr. S. Dalila, and I would say that if it was as simple as that, I think your math would be correct. So let me ask this question, and when we get around to public, when we get done with public comment, if the staff would come up and talk to it. But the Pacific Salmon Treaty has about a 12.5% decrease in the impacts for northern migrating stocks. And at the Fish Committee, I think the question was, given that 12.5%, could you look at inside the model, do the mathematic gyrations that you're speaking of, and come up with an equivalent exploitation rate that can be added together? And the answer was 4.75%. That's what I was taking from that, and but maybe we can ask the staff to verify just so we're all clear on that at the end. Yeah.
Anything else? Commissioner Thorburn.
Well, this came early on in my time on the commission. Complicated stuff. I've tried to stay up on it. Listening to the testimony today, I'm hearing a lot of the things that I feel about the policy and how it's functioned. That everybody's effort to try and turn this in, or to try and have it be a conservation policy, but really, when we hear it, it sounds like a food fight as it comes back to us year after year. So one of the things that I've thought about, and I am kind of directing this to you because you've said, okay, now as you've watched it, it changed your mind sort of about the hatcheries. And I guess there was real support for the trajectory of recovery that was put in, that is, to go from 20% to the 14%. I've always wondered about that. Here we are taking a system that for 100 years has been a hatchery system and trying to turn it into a natural system. Why do we have to do that so fast? I mean, could we slow it down? I'm curious about your thoughts about that, because I know you've been involved and an advocate for a while.
At the rates that were proposed, we did scenarios. Andy Appleby ran these models. What would happen if you fished at a 10% rate, 14, 20, 25, 30, or 40, like we've been doing? And you could just see what the likelihood is that we would eventually meet the natural wild spawning escapement goal for the basin. And the number that came out is that we had a decent shot at achieving that within 16 to 21 years if we disciplined ourselves to fish at 14%. Now, 14 right out of the gate was rejected by the advisors because, oh my gosh, that's too big a hit. Can we transition and work our way to that? And, which would, again, delay the process by another 4 or 5 years, another Chinook life cycle. So now we're probably talking 21 to 25 years, 26 years. It all comes down to the discipline. You asked about the conservation versus the food fight. The conservation comes from the exploitation rate. That's the only thing we're controlling here. We can't control how many fish come back to us, apart from the hatchery production that's there. But when they get back, the conservation comes off. How do we discipline ourselves and restrain ourselves from taking the wild fish in a greater proportion than they can reproduce themselves? I mean, that's what fishing sustainably is all about. Yes, fish. Fish to the extent that you're not taking the fish faster than they can be reproduced. And that is exactly what we've been doing. We haven't had the discipline to keep it at the low rate. So, yes, within the low rate, there's a food fight. That's just the nature of the beast. That's what North of Falcon is. Every year we go through this, and people are just appalled that everyone's fighting over who gets to kill them. But the conservation is set up front before North of the Falcon really starts. It's in your policies. It's in these escapement goals. It's in the impact rate set by ESA. That's the conservation. Then we get into this 2-month food fight. It's the nature of the beast. You can't avoid it. And
unfortunately, it's your decision as to how the pie is split up socially. The biology has already been taken care of based on your federal guidelines, your escapement goals, and these impact rates that we're imposing on ourselves. So that's how I would answer that question. Thank you.
Thank you, folks. We'll now take comments from the commission. I'm sorry. That's why I asked if we had everybody sign. I'm sorry. I only had six of them. Oh, I want to talk to Andy.
No.
You would you guys sign up for Willapa or Grace Harbor? I guess we're not done yet. I asked a little while ago. You know. Don't throw, huh?
Those guys are right.
Did you hide them in?
Huh? Yeah, just bring them in.
I signed up for Willapa.
Okay. Lance, I don't know. You got to help me, sir.
I have all of them signed up for 25. That's item 25.
We've been known as mistakes. Let's just go with that.
Just call them up. So are you all signed up for 25 as well?
You all signed up for 25, which is Grace Harbor. That's everybody wrote 25.
I did too.
Did you fill out two of them or one?
I filled out 24.
Okay. Well, all the ones I have here now are for Grays Harbor, but I will call you up for Willapa if you would like. So, Tim Hamilton, Bob Lake, and Joe Durham, please. And Andy, you're coming up next, though. So.
So we're on Willapa?
As a matter of fact, we are. Yeah.
Thanks again for having us up. Willapa is an interesting thing.
Yeah, we're learning it.
The problem we have is wherever you set, and a cultural problem versus a staff problem. A cultural problem is put the figure anywhere you want, they go over. You've got preseason forecasts that came in last year. There were about half for Coho what they thought they were going to be. There were so few boats on the water. That's why the harvest rates fell even further, you know. The department cannot give a commercial fisherman fish they don't have, okay? So these models are all paper fish. Okay, you can't sell them and you can't eat them. So when you look at where we're at the difference between 14 and 20%, you go to these options they put in here for a paper trial run, okay? There's about 1,200 coho difference between model C and D for the Chinook fleet. 1,200 fish. Divide that by 40 boats. You can't do it. You don't have the fish. Now, we ran at 20%, but we didn't. If you go back in times past when it was a 70%, approximately 70% of the Chinook and 88% of the coho and 99.9% of the chum went into a commercial net, if you go back to that point in time, you'll see, if you looked at it, we were seeing harvest rates where they thought they could go to 30% and they were fishing at 50 and 60%. Okay. So today, our discipline gets us within about almost 4.75%. So you can't accomplish anything here. And when you start changing these things as a notion of changing back to the South, like Francis mentioned, what are you going to do? Point to the bar next time? We blow it here, we blow it there, and we just keep turning it back and forth depending on who gets the fish at that particular point in time. Okay, that's a hell of a management tool. We can get there. And here's my final point. I think you should do what the department recommends that you do. How can you have $1 million of salary sitting behind me and have this department tell us there will be no recommendations whatsoever? Now, what this means is they will not take the risk. This is going to be, if you move this policy at all, leave it alone. If you can't fix something, leave it alone, because we're going to have meetings out there and they're going to say, it's going to look like the Flip Wilson movie, you know, the TV show, The Devil Made Me Do It. But it wasn't the devil. It was the commission that told us to do this. If they don't have the confidence to recommend something, do nothing. Thank you.
Bob Lake.
Thank you.
Could you get the mic? Get the mic, please, Bob.
Just a minute.
I'm Bob Lake. I'm actually one of the advisors, commercial advisor for Willapa Bay, and also the president of the Gilliland Association, as well as a manager for the Regional Fisheries Enhancement Group. I want to clarify a couple of things because they've been overlooked. Now, let's start out with, and I'm sure Commissioner McIsaac remembers me as Dipian Bob. We battled this in PFMC for years and years. The cutoff date for our Dipian fish was August 15th. Brian Eady was the harvest manager for the department at that time, and that was when that's when the fish finally subsided. The Columbia River Dipian fish were not being impacted by over 50%. Was the 15th of August. Also, the hatchery on the north end of the bay, the hatchery Chinook, peaked the 24th to the 28th of August. So this needs to be, and in order for us to harvest those hatchery fish, we have to be in there at the end of August, period. And I'm going to quote Andy Appleby from the Scientific Review on PHAS and all that. The only way to control that we have, the only control we have on to remove the hatchery stocks is with the gillnet fishery. That's the bottom line. So unless we're in there in that time frame, there's no way we control it, can control it. And I would also like to point out, and this got missed, about 3 years ago, we went to legislature and increased our landing tax for salmon. The commercial fishermen did, the gillnetters and the trawlers, for a 1% landing tax for funds to manage our fisheries. So please don't forget that. We're trying to help the staff get paid and the whole works, because the staff does a whole hell of a lot of work. And that's about all. If you got any questions, I'll be more than willing to answer them for you.
Thank you, Bob. Joe Durham.
Again, thank you for allowing me to be here to speak to you. I'm not part of the advisory group for Willapa, but I was an advisor for some of the advisors. There were thousands and thousands of hours spent at meetings with you, without you, individuals meeting with in Willapa and Montesino to put together this harvest management plan. You put it together. It's supposed to be a 10-year plan. My recommendation is abide by the plan. Work on the perimeters. If you see something within the plan you don't like, or the recreational fisherman see something, commercial see something, put those down. Put them as additives to that plan. And when the plan comes up for reissue or reevaluating, then you make the changes. You sit down, everybody together, cooperatively. Most people didn't agree with it. A lot of people agreed with it. But the plan was put together for that purpose. And as far as conservation, I agree with some things that have been said, Bob, and others have said it. You've moved those Chinook from one end of the bay to the other, back to the other, to the middle, to the back to the bottom, and then back. Now you want to take them back to the top. I believe the Willapa River would probably should be your main river down there. And as far as managing for wild stocks, you don't know what's wild in that system and what's not. You know what's hatchery marked and what's not. But you got to remember one thing: you call origin stocks, those are the ones that spawn in the wild. You got to remember, every hatchery fish down there came from the original stocks of that river. They're a prodigy. The genetics aren't the same. Maybe not the same. It should be pretty close to the same, but it's just their habit. It's like taking the boy out of the country, put him in the city. It takes them a long time to adapt, and getting back into the country takes a long time to adapt again. That same thing is happening with our fish when you move them one Norse to Horse or whatever they are. Live by the plan. You created it. Live with it. Make your side discussion. Sit down, and it's up to the commission when and where you change that plan. It's in your hands, and the commercials are suffering. The recreational fishermen are screaming. There should be fishery there for all. But Francis made the point. You don't know what's coming back. What you're doing is you're managing people. You're not managing the fish. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, gentlemen. Next three would be Ross Barkhurst, Art Holman, and Marlisa Dugan. Ross?
Hello again. Chad made a good case for why a policy, okay? And it was to add something called conservation first, and it was to add a recreational priority for one fish, okay? And much of what you heard today is let's dump that, okay? Fish for all is a euphemism, okay? You saw the numbers, 88% for commercial, nothing for conservation. Recs get the scraps. I'd be glad to pay 1% more on my license fee to get some more fish anytime. What's missing from the presentation is asterisk. You put out a policy. You were given four options, and there should be an asterisk by everything in there that deviates from the policy, and there would be 15 or 20 of them. The problem is you come up with a good policy with a lot of public input and help, and the department doesn't follow it. We were told in 15 and 16 we had a pickle. The recreational fishermen had too much impact on their one priority. Okay? It wasn't a pickle. It was a banana in the ear of conservation and recreational fishermen. That's what it was, a banana. Okay, and we're asking to go back to the banana. And I sent you a recommendation. We need to make some progress towards 14%. And manage what we get, and we need to have payback. Right now, if we overharvest, which we do, it's a payoff. It needs to be payback, and things will change. Thank you.
Thank you, Ross. Art?
Okay. Art Holman, I've been fishing for over 70 years. I've fished the Willapa since about 2005, well, the bay. I started fishing the Willapa streams in 1970. The sports are supposed to have priority on the Kings. And yet, 2018, the sports were given 286 impacts. The commercials, over 300. So they're one of our priority for the Kings. Then they turn around and they put in the control zone. Well, you guys slapped it. Face is right in the face when you put the commercials back in the Columbia in the mainstream and gave them 33% of what's harvestable. What happened to what we were doing away with in the control zone where it took us out of getting to the southbound fish? That's our only area we can do that. And you guys took us out of it. You might as well just put a big sign on the boat launch saying, sports not welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Art. Marlisa?
Thank you, commissioners. Director, I have some comments for you here.
Could you use the mic, please?
Thank you, everyone. I have some particular comments for the director at the end. First of all, I'm just going to try to recap quickly. That control zone needs to be shot in the foot. I really think Art's got it right. In the past, it was part of the early dip-in zone for commercials, and the minute they couldn't get out there, they slap a control zone on wreck marine fishers, and then they give unlimited access to wild fish in the ocean out in front. And I think the only people being penalized here is the terminal recreational fishers in there, and some serious reconsideration needs to be done on that in 2019. We also need to enforce the payback portion of the policy here towards the end. That's a serious matter. That alone will help the commercials regulate themselves. Listening through everyone's conversation for commercial comments, it's clear that they'd like to go back to the days of old, where they fished early, they fished late, they fished in between, and to the heck with, you know, leaving the wrecks an empty pond to fish in, which is just what it was in the Willapa. It's a build-up fishery, and you can't go back to that. For the first time in 40 years, we're seeing fish return to the NEMA in more normal runs there, where they would come in late July all the way through August, instead of just starting to see fish trickle in on the 1st of September. This is what you're going to see if we stay with the policy and we keep the commercials focused on coho and using their impacts for Chinook towards coho only. Please address the fact that we live in changing times, that the recreational fishers fleet, both freshwater and marine, is huge and growing and expanding, and we need some place to go. The priority on Chinook should be real. It should be maintained. We need more impacts than the commercial guys do. We need to stop finding a way and stealing impacts from everyone else just to give them some kind of a season. I have so much to say, I can't possibly get it in here, but I'm going to give you a shot. I had a lot to say, and I'm going to swap to something else because I'd like to say something good, okay? I'd like to thank Chad and Barb for working really hard with North of Falcon, with these meetings that we do. They've been incredible in trying to provide me and others with all the data that we need. I'd like to give them a big hand. I'd also like to thank the department for the wonderful recreational fishery we have on the North NEMA. There's so much that's right there in this little river and this hatchery go unnoticed. We are not managing for a wild run of Chinook there. We meet our escapement of wild Chinook that we do have. We are often used to backfill our native chum run from Williams Creek, which dumps into the NEMA and is used to backfill other hatcheries in the area. It is a self-sustaining chum run that is healthy and active and expanding right now. We have a great watershed. Can I please continue?
Briefly, please. Yeah.
The NEMA hatchery puts out 3.2 million release annually. We provide more Chinook for commercial opportunity right now than either the Nacelle or the Willapa hatcheries. We have an incredible, robust recreational freshwater fishery, more than Willapa or Nacelle combined. We catch more fish than the marine wrecks do out there. We have a self-sustaining Lake Coho run in the river. We raise about a million of Nacelle's coho. They ship them over to us because we have much more favorable water conditions over on the NEMA.
Need you to wrap up.
And I'm going to wrap it up with saying, and to top it all off, in 2019, I've got more wild steelhead in the river than you can shake a stick at. So I don't know how much better it can get than this little tiny river with this hatchery that was placed in the right place to make it possible for all the user groups to get a whack at it. And I just want to say thank you very much, and please help me keep this something that's right going. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Here comes a guy to shake the stick, Norm Reinhart. Andy Mitby and Greg King. I'm sorry? No, you're going to shake it at the steelhead. Norm, good to see you again.
Am I on?
I don't know.
My name's Norm Reinhart. I'm the president of the Kitsap Pogie Club. I sit on four of your salmon advisory committees. Have you ever heard of a fishing cane? That's why I have a fishing stick. TSA took my hook at the airport that I had clipped on here. There's a hole in there for a piece of string because I'll go fishing anywhere. But here's what I'm here for. We want some guidance down at Willapa. We're almost at the end of North of Falcon. I'm getting on an airplane at my own expense because I'm not in business. I'm just a retired federal guy. I'm going to Roner Park. We need some guidance. That's why I'm here. We haven't had any guidance. I've driven 100 miles three or four times now to find out what can we do at Willapa, and we have no guidance. So please, we have one last shot for the public to have some input this coming week. Please provide the department that guidance. Now, to talk about the policy. You know, a bunch of dysfunction. I've been sitting on that committee since about 2006 or 2004, something like that. You know, 14%, 20%, 35%. It's already been said. There was a gentleman that just passed that was really a great asset to the state of Washington, DFW, Steve Thiesfeld. Steve was a mentor of mine. He and I talked about this policy one day, and he told me, if we do what you guys are talking about, there is going to be great pain. Not only in the commercial sector, but in the recreational sector. When I knew we were going to cut Forks Creek by 90%, I suspected that the recreational fleet was going to have a lot of heartburn in 2T. We'll find more about that this coming year. But I was willing to make that sacrifice for conservation, but in a more indirect way. I believe in hatchery reform. But I also believe that hatchery reform is an unfunded mandate. If this policy could have been put in place with the infrastructure that's required, it would work. A second hope of mine was that because of this unique situation we have with no co-manager involvement in terms of making it complicated, that we could also go back and petition the legislature to allow other methodologies for commercial harvest and allow the entrepreneurial spirit of the business community to be applied to figure out how to do that. We tried, and it went down in flames. I would suggest that we try again. This is not about putting Gillnetters out of business. A Gillnet is a valuable tool. But I also believe that we have sold ourselves short to think it's the only tool that'll work. We need to be farsighted. This policy was an attempt at that. But because...
Thank you, Norm.
Am I done?
You've got to keep moving, buddy.
Okay. Please reconsider looking at alternative ways of fishing. Thank you.
Thank you. Andy Mitby.
I'll jump right into that. We have alternative gears. We don't have the time to use them. We have dates we cannot fish before. These are the dates we would use alternative gears. We have been asked to sacrifice our fishery. We have bent over to try and change our fishery. Alternative gears, we've got them. Do we have the time to use them? Not much. Can we control the PHAS as we ramp up fisheries? Not the state we're in. Not going to happen. We have a tool, time and area, to reduce the conflict. It can be used. It was used in prior years, and it was very successful. They talk about the control zone has been taken away from them. The policy removed the control zone from them with liberal bag limits. They had bag limits that were taken away from the commercial mortalities. What they ended up doing, and they knew they were doing it, was catching the Columbia River fish. We are talking about Willapaw policy, not Columbia River. The control zone is a Columbia River dip-in fishery. Everybody knows it. Okay, if we're going to raise more production, we're going to have to change where we're fishing and how much we're fishing. Okay, we need to control the PHAS. The primary river does not have to be in Willapaw Bay. Willapaw Bay is a hatchery-managed system. We did a study between the hatchery and the natural spawners. The study came out negligible. Okay, we're trying to fix something that can't be fixed. These fish don't exist. Make it a hatchery system. There will be fish for everybody. Last thing, you've heard almost everything there is. The timeline for 16 to 21 years, which is the way I understood it when I heard it, was based for an ESA fish. We have heard it from higher-ups. We're not in threat of an ESA fish in the Willapaw system at this time. What we can do now, we can quit building fences and build a bigger table for everybody to sit at and catch some fish for everybody. Thank you.
Greg.
Good morning, Commissioner. Chair Carpenter, Director Seeswin. In my discussions with Jeremy Jordan at NOAA Fisheries at the PFMC and last week at North of Falcon, he's telling me that Willapaw Bay has endless amount of production we can do in Willapaw Bay. I suggested we do $3.5 million in the South Bay and $3.5 million in Forks Creek Hatchery. We use gill nets to mop up and control PHAS. This is a valuable fishery here. I have friends that have property in North Cove. We don't go over there anymore. Larry, you got property over there, too. Those communities need fish to survive. Recreational, we're getting killed. We're getting killed there at Oakland. I don't go down to South Bay and fish. That's too nasty down there. It gets just too out of hand. But this is a production problem, not a gill net problem. It's the same thing as Columbia River. I've said it before. It's not a gill net problem. It's a production problem. You guys all know this. We've been public testimony to death on these issues. We know what to do. You know, we're getting sick and tired of coming to this fight. We need to work. As a sportsman, I want to extend my hand to the commercial fishing, gill net guys, and work with them and not have this stab them in the back, you know, kick them down the road. They're valuable. They need to. That's the only way we can control PHAS is with the gill nets. We need to work together. You guys know that. I've talked to that before. I don't know how many more commission meetings I got to come to. We need to make some hard decisions here, you know, and work together. $3.5 million at Forks Creek, that's not a problem. You know, we need to get funding. Yep. And I support the fee increase. I think everybody should support the fee increase. We want a healthy department. We don't want a sick department. You know, if we have a sick department, we have nothing. I mean, I got to commend you. You guys, I don't want your job. no thanks. With that Skagit thing this morning, I really commend you guys, and you guys got a hard job, but we need to do some production. I think in between 67 and 78, all user groups caught 6.5 million salmon in Washington State total. Sports, gill nets, purse seines, reef nets, and tribal, and there was one other one I'm missing. I wonder what the escapement was. 6.5 million all user groups caught. Escapement had to be 4 or 5 million. We just don't produce the fish. We need to produce fish. And how much of this production can we contribute to orca whale from Willapa Bay? You know, we need to produce some fish for orca whale. That's the number one thing, really. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Do you have a question? No. Staff? Please come up here. You want to say something? Go ahead. Commissioner McIsaac?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, maybe I'll get started here for us. Seems like we're looking at two different things. One is the process for a policy review. And so maybe if you could turn to slide 15, I would... speak to a few things that get to maybe some guidance that the commission might go along with regard to the process moving forward. As a secondary matter, then there's the question of what to do for 2019. And when we get to that, I would have a motion to put on the table for everybody to think about. But maybe the easiest one, and before we get to the motion, I'd like to go back to the question to staff about the 4.7% math. But in terms of just offering some guidance on the proposed schedule for the review here, you know, we've heard a lot of ideas for change. Some people say the whole policy ought to be replaced. Some people want to stay with the policy. So when would that really come up, and what is the process? So a couple of suggestions here on this that the staff incorporate in the review analysis, any feedback from the commission at this meeting and any questions that commissioners might add in the next couple of weeks. I would suggest that a table of contents for the outline of a comprehensive review be provided to the commission in early May and to the Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Group, a table of contents as to what is going to be in the review. I would suggest on our process that we add some more fish committee meetings than just the one in August, to add them at the June, September, and October commission meetings in a similar matter as to the Columbia River, so that we could dig into a little deeper
the half an hour meeting the other day just wasn't quite sufficient. The final report that's listed here as a November commission meeting matter. We don't have a commission meeting in November. We have one in October 18th and 19th. So I presume that's really what's meant here. And I think at that meeting, we would have the final comprehensive report of how things went. What was the policy performance? What worked, what didn't? We got a little outline from the staff at the December Fish Committee meeting that got to the start of that. But at any rate, this would be the time we would get the full ball of wax of what worked and what didn't work. And at that time, I think, is when we would take up the question of, well, what kind of changes should be there? And the commission ought to take on the chore of adopting a range of alternatives for analysis. And then I'd add two things on the bottom of this comprehensive review that get to finality on what would a policy change be, if any. And the first would be to add in January of 2020, with public testimony, we would hear the staff analysis of the range of alternatives for policy revisions, the commission to identify a preferred alternative for public review, and identify a public review timeline for a strikeout markup version of the policy 3622 showing any proposed changes. So whatever the commission would like to put forward, I think, needs to go out to the public with a significant amount of time for the public to review whatever we come up with as proposed changes, if we have any. And then in February or March, find a spot for an agenda item where the commission would make a final decision on any policy language changes, and public comment should be taken at that meeting as well. Lastly, on process, I think we ought to sprinkle in some Willapa Bay Salmon Advisory Body meetings between the final report and the final council commission decision on any changes. So before going to the other question, that's my input here for a process whereby we get to finality on any changes for this policy that would come about from a comprehensive review that I presume will show that some changes might be in order for consideration.
Ron, please.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter. Commissioner McIsaac, to get at what you were just speaking to, appreciate your comments and thoughts. For the sake of presentation, not every single public meeting or advisor meeting is on this agenda, so know that it's our intention to stay close to the public as we walk through our comprehensive plan, as well as future modifications or possible edits for comments for the policy, if you choose to want to look towards policy modification. I would like to just, if I can, Chair Carpenter, continue with, there were a lot of great comments that all of you just heard, and I'll echo a couple. I guess first is that we currently don't have ESA-listed salmon populations in Willapa Bay, and we don't want them. Yeah. We have to keep our eye focused on that. We do currently utilize current principles that in some policies you've asked us to pause on. You did not ask us to pause on those in this policy. And so we are not. However, we are on this parallel tracks, just as a reminder, that the hatchery and fishery reform policy, the first public meeting is April 11th out in Lacey, and that public process in which we will go out and very openly and transparently review the science behind hatchery, the principles that we've been operating under, and what science is out there for adoption by this body. I look forward to that. That's going to be, it could keep us on the mark we're at, and it could provide us a new direction, and I'm excited about that. The most important thing that we can do is operate our facilities, our salmon facilities, properly, scientifically. And because if we don't, we won't have the sustainable populations that the people behind me and that have spoken to you today are looking for. I do want to touch just briefly on a staff recommendation. I heard that it's not clear what a staff recommendation would look like. So because of all these moving parts, I would hope that we can pause the policy and stick with what would have been option C or something similar to that until we can resolve all of these other moving parts that we have collectively in hatchery operations, which boil down to broodstock management and genetic management of stocks and populations that we rear and interact with. So I heard that as a concern from the public, and I wanted to try to address that, but that's what our recommendation to the commission would be.
I have a couple questions for you, Ron. I've heard a number of times over the last few years, and an ex-employee of yours, Jeremy Jording, who now works for NIMS, I've heard his name come up as people have quizzed him about, is there any risk of the streams in Willapa Bay being listed under the Endangered Species Act? And I've been told a dozen times, no, not to worry, not to worry. I guess my question of you is, and I respect and know Jeremy, I haven't seen him for a while, but if some entity out there wanted to file a petition, what does that mean and what is that process? If somebody wanted to file an ESA to get an ESA listed. And the second question, if you don't mind, I'll put it on the table. I'd like to get your perspective, because you have an extreme background in hatchery management and a lot of knowledge about that. As far as these different streams coming into Willapa, what is your vision of any adjustments, primary, blah, 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 blah? Can you give us that?
Chair Carpenter, thank you very much.
Remember, you're on TV.
Relative to ESA, we have extirpated populations in Puget Sound, and I'll point us all to the Nisqually River, where the only fish remaining in the Nisqually River is a transferred Green River Chinook. ESA will be based on, if it's ever petitioned within Willapa Bay, on populations that are spawning naturally in that bay. So can we have ESA listed populations? Do we have to do what we have to do relative to managing properly from a genetics perspective? Absolutely. I've had the same conversation with Mr. Jording. I enjoy those conversations. And yes, he says you could raise production. There are always caveats around that and always additional information. It's never just been you can raise millions of more fish. There are always other scenarios. Relative to your second question, I'll be as candid as I always am with this body and know that it's done as respectfully as possible. Willapa Bay was the first policy that we adopted from a salmon management plan. Then we went Grays Harbor, then Columbia River, then Willapa Bay. And as we progressed, I think I have that order right. As we progressed through them, Willapa Bay ended up being the most restrictive policy this body implemented. Nowhere else did you take the initiative to provide us or give us guidance or limit management flexibility as you did here with the stock designations that you've put in place. So back in 2010, we had a draft management plan that we had developed, and we had developed it in conjunction with NOAA Fisheries, where we looked at a strata from the north side or the north of the mouth of the Columbia River up past Grays Harbor that equaled the recovery zone of the lower Columbia River strata. And what we were working on is how we would set those stock designations, those populations that we would designate primary contributing or stabilizing, so that we knew which populations were the most important for genetic management. We'd implemented that for 4 years when the commission asked us to start a policy review. It was a document. It still resides on our website. We had modified production at facilities. We had primary contributing and stabilizing populations, but they were connected to what was happening in Grays Harbor and the populations there. So instead of having to have two primary populations within Willapa Bay, we had one in Willapa Bay and one or more in Grays Harbor. With the current policy, we don't have, as managers, the flexibility to do that. We don't have that ability to go work with NOAA Fisheries, to work with the public, to seek public comment, and to modify any of that. And I still believe that because of the shift of our initial stance from the management plan that we had to the policy that you put in place, that's the change that you're hearing frustration by, because we shifted primary populations. When you take the largest step possible to make a primary population nacelle plummeted, as lots of people behind me predicted, and then we switch it around and we say, let's do it to Willapa, and now prior to the rebound of production, whether it's a contributing or stabilizing population in nacelle, Willapa is going to get down to where it's going to be a minimal hatchery influence and be a wild population or naturally spawning population. We learn a lot from that, but if we're looking to where that population should be, we should also be looking at not only where the spawning grounds and the biology of the animal is going to be best benefited, but we should look at how we want to manage the body of water for fisheries. Having been out in Willapa Bay for a decade of my career, Willapa can be an intense fishery that can support recreational and commercial bodies if we have some flexibility to look at it and to manage it. So,
excuse me. Okay, Commissioner Thorburn.
Thank you for your frankness. This is directed to my fellow commissioners, and my experience with this policy. As I said, I was a brand new commissioner when it came before us, and it was all pretty new to me, terminology. But I had a gut feeling about it that you just articulated, and that is that we call it policy, but it's a lot of it's management. And we've got, I mean, listen to you. The knowledge that you have, I trust you to manage these fisheries. And so you just articulated very well, I think, my concern with this policy.
And if I may, Commissioner Thorburn, thank you for that. appreciate those comments. I don't think it was the intention of the commission. There are a lot of people behind me that are our advisors, have been for a long time. We went through that policy eyes wide open. We thought we were doing and bringing you the right information. And we could stay that course. We could reduce our policy to 14%. I don't think that with the current makeup of production and stock management and the fisheries that we know, that Willapa would ever be the same if we did that.
Commissioner McIsaac.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks for the explanation of Endangered Species Act listings. And I think there are some folks who think that the Willapa, I'm going to ask this question in terms of just fall Chinook, not cohort chum, but and the question gets to listing an individual population, or does an entire evolutionarily significant unit get listed? And so some people might think the Willapa population could be listed by itself under the Endangered Species Act. And there are others who say, no, it's an ESU function, and this goes all the way to the Willapa, Grays Harbor, Ho, Quileute, up the whole coast, that it would have to list the entire aggregate of every single population in the ESU, and then even if there are healthy ones in there, like in the Quileute or the Ho, they become listed even if they're healthy. So my question is, could you try to characterize for us the threat of an individual fall Chinook population in Willapa being listed?
So, Commissioner McIsaac, thanks for the question, I think. So you are correct. I can reference different evolutionary significant units within the Columbia and or Puget Sound. Puget Sound from the Elwha East down into Deep South Sound is one ESU. And they looked at that from what populations in regional areas that they needed to have recovery, and they have criteria built on how they would look at stocks. And I'm not going to get to all of this, Commissioner, but I think that so I look back at in the history when the technical review teams, those teams that are developed by federal, local, state managers that look at all of the populations, the last time they did a coastal review, they looked at Willapa Bay and said, wow, way too much hatchery influence. We're going to walk right on by it. We're not even going to review it. That's the last review we had. So in the late 90s. So has it changed? No. If you were to look at the genetic makeup of any natural spawning or hatchery population in Willapa Bay, genetically it looks exactly the same. That doesn't mean that you can't have a sustainable natural spawning population that begins to distance itself or modify itself genetically in that makeup and become more productive. It's the length of time. It's the policy call that I think that one of the many policy calls that may come back to us as we look at the data and the information that comes back on the hatchery and fishery reform policy. That's what's making that an exciting thing for me. It's not that we may have done it wrong. We're going to have some tweaks in new information and new research. That's the exciting part. It's then let's talk about how long it's going to take us to recover. Nowhere in the recovery program during the biological opinions and the incidental take permits that NOAA gives us under ESA do they say, oh, and you have to do this in the next 10 years. We put that on ourselves, and we need to keep our eyes wide open when we get to those points of decision.
Commissioner Grayville.
think, I agree with Commissioner Thornburn. I came on at the same time, and I remember talking to Commissioner McKeel right after the vote on Willapa Bay, saying that he had some good suggestions that we didn't have time to consider. I really appreciate the work that's been done on this policy now. I've been able to talk with Chad Nearing about this several occasions. He's really helpful. There's new information coming online all the time, and in recent years. We're going to get a lot better at, you will be able to have the tools to manage Willapa Bay better. And I agree with Commissioner Thornburn that we need to set policy and not so much manage these fisheries. What I most appreciate, Ron, is that you actually gave us a clear recommendation from staff to move forward. This is something I've been having chat for a long time. That's a real benefit to us. Cuts through a lot of this. You're the manager.
Please advise us from your with the information that you have how we should proceed. And if I'm not stepping out of line here, I think Commissioner Baker's back. I think I would like to, and I don't want to interfere with your thoughts, but if I may suggest a motion that for the 2019 season that we adopt option C as recommended by staff.
I'll second. I'm not sure that we need to add as recommended by staff, though. Well, right. I mean, because it's the option that I lean to. Even I appreciate that we got the recommendation. I'm glad to hear that I sort of matched where staff was, but I'm not sure we have to put it on staff necessarily.
That's fine.
It's our policy and where we're going.
I move we adopt.
So we
option
have a motion
C.
And a second. Commissioner McKay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The motion that I had been thinking about is very consistent with option C, but it's not nearly as specific, getting down to 18.3, 19.3, 10.0s, and things like that. It was, in essence, to suspend the Chinook guidance point number 6. In the policy, which says go down to 14% and to manage instead for 20%. And my logic had been that we could get to conservation neutrality approximately by the PST savings added onto the 14%. So it was passing a little bit of a conservation threshold for me. I think while we're going through a comprehensive review, that it would probably be good to try to stay with as much as the plan as we could. There are a lot of ideas to change a lot of things, and I think a lot of them are in order to be analyzed thoroughly, but not just a 2019 knee-jerk reaction. So, and I would really like to see in a comprehensive review some better analysis of why the 14% was there to start with, what's the productivity of the fish, and the alpha values, and some real technical things that we can't get in here today. Guidance point number 6 also has some things in about dates and lines. And in this option number C, I guess I see an August 1 for the Mark Selective Fishery, and I don't see anything about lines, so maybe that's consistent with this motion as well. It has some coho bag limits in option C. It's silent to Chinook. I see Chinook bag limit at 3. And I had been suggesting 2 as the Chinook bag limit. So my motion was to give the staff the flexibility to optimize management measures and provide the general guidance. So when you go to North of Falcon and you hear this, that, and the other thing, that the staff would have the flexibility to deviate from exactly what's up there on number C. It also had something about the commercial fishery specifically to be optimized using both gillnet and tanglenet fisheries and allow for alternative gear experimentation. We might not get any this year, but I think it's, as you've heard me say on the Columbia River, we do need to start thinking down the line to the future. So it would be any kind of commercial gear. Alternative gear obviously has got to have notice to the staff. So
can I just make an
So I'm still not sure if I'm going to support the motion or not, but I'm just trying to judge it.
I just wanted to clarify the motion. The option C is to continue what we passed in 2018, and so what was in the slide that was up when you started talking, we've gone to the previous slide, that was an analysis of what's of using the preseason predictions and what's going to happen in option C. It's we're not pinning staff to that. That's based on our preseason predictions. The motion itself is to continue what we did in 2018, which is to halt the policy at 20% impact. So that's the motion. It's pretty straightforward.
Ron, please.
Chair Carpenter and Commissioner Thorburn, thank you. Our reference to C and how that was constructed was as close to the remainder of the policy as we possibly could model it. So commercial fishing lines, all those things in place. Like last year, we will continue to evaluate different parameters. Dip-ins, you heard in public comment on the bubble that we put in place because of our impact on southbound Thule Chinook. We will continue to look at that. We talked about that at Fish Committee meeting yesterday. We'll continue to evaluate that to see if that's a needed precautionary approach for the Columbia River stocks this year. And communicate that and keep people apprised of that as we go through the process. But we were trying to stay as close to the original policy as we possibly could.
Mr. Kehoe.
Yeah, thank you. So along the lines of what Commissioner McIsaac was thinking about in terms of his motion, so I'm referring to the policy, paragraph 6, fishery management after 2018. You know, we reference the 14%, obviously, and then B and C reference these restrictions on commercial fishing in 2T and 2U prior to September, and then no commercial Chinook fisheries occur 2M and you know what I'm saying. So option C. Does that incorporate subparagraph 6B and 6C, those restrictions?
Yes, thank you for the question, Commissioner Kehoe.
It is.
That okay. was developed with
so
those
if,
lines
it,
in mind.
If that's the case, I prefer Commissioner McIsaac's motion. I think we're getting, you know, all this other stuff about dates and lines and I think that if we're more specific and we were to the motion were to eliminate or put in abeyance, I guess paragraph 6, I would be in favor of that motion.
Chair Carpenter, thank you. I would just go back to some of the comments made earlier from some of the public and certainly by Commissioner Graybill. We have very knowledgeable professional staff. And if the commission were to take a look at the original motion or to modify the motion to allow some greater flexibility in management with its sideboards relative to harvest rates. We have models, and we will continue with a precautionary approach to do our best at trying to achieve those. So I know that I have staff in place. We have a group of advisors in place that could build a fishery that could meet either of those scenarios. So,
Don, Commissioner Kazik, the motion that that you're making, how does that deal with the modifications passed last year? And or just suspending the final section of the policy for 2018?
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. First of all, I haven't made a motion yet. The motion...
I thought you... sounded like it.
No. The motion on the table originally was to adopt option C, and then I heard the motion is to adopt last year's guidance. So I'm not even clear what the motion is that's been made and seconded. However, I had been prepared to make a motion that was nearly identical to last year's. If you saw the language, you'd say, well, that looks exactly like last year's, but it's not. It's slightly different. So there's a possibility to amend the motion that's currently on the table and get it close, but I think right now I'd like to have clarity of what is the motion that's on the table.
Option C.
It's option 3 in our summary, which says 2018.
Commissioner Baker has a question.
Well, I don't know if it's a question. I was going to point out the same thing everybody else is figuring out at the same time, which is that we have a little bit of a parliamentary issue here. I believe that without having a rewind tape, that we have option C on the table, which is essentially staying with last year. Correct? Is that what everybody understands?
No, I don't understand that.
Well, you don't understand it, or you don't think that's what it is?
I don't think that's what it is.
Who made the motion?
David made the motion.
Hey, Dave, could you restate your motion, please?
I move that for the 2019 season on Willapa Bay that we select option C.
Correct.
Okay. It's that simple.
Mm-hmm. And I
second. Mr. Thorburn made a second.
So where we are now is that we have a motion that's been seconded. We could have a motion to amend the motion and go from there, or we can vote and carry on.
I think that's frankly where we are. We have a motion on the table. We have to deal with that.
Yeah.
And then there could be an amendment. So,
Thank you. I would like to amend the motion and to specify that paragraph 6 of the policy is suspended for 2019.
Is there any discussion?
Second from McIsaac.
Second from McIsaac.
So we have an amended motion. Is there discussion?
Is there any discussion on the amended motion?
Input from staff.
I'll just say I can support that.
Staff comments?
Come on, let's go.
Chair Carpenter, thank you. As I previously stated, we have qualified staff in the model to be able to go either way. I think that what the motion does is it gives us greater flexibility to offer opportunity within the sectors to... as we go through the planning process.
Thank you. Okay, we are first going to vote. We will vote on the amendment.
Yeah.
We'll call for the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Now, Commissioner McKenzie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Considering another amendment to the motion, option C has in it a total adult bag limit for Chinook 3, I think. Is that correct? So, this question of whether or not we would be getting into a pickle or not has something to do with the bag limit that had been 4 and was down to 3, and
and
I had Don, if I may interrupt you in the spirit of moving this along, I would recommend that we leave that decision to staff.
Yes. Thank you.
They're going to manage the fishery as we had just prescribed.
We have fish manager.
And I don't, in all fairness, I don't think we need to debate that today.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm fine with leaving, as I had originally intended, as much flexibility to staff as I would like. The motion says three. The motion doesn't speak to Washaway Beach or any of that. However, if the commission's comfortable with having this flexibility all around the horn on this, I don't know where it starts and ends, but on the bag limit question, I'm not sure three is the right number.
Fine.
Well, I don't think three is the right number, but I would, at this point, leave it to Ron, as I would the control zone, the Washaway Beach deal, whatever. Are you comfortable with those? I don't know how prescriptive we need to get, Ron, and let you do your job. And
so, Chair Carpenter, if the it appears as though the commission has given me guidance on option C, which has a firm bag limit in it, if you want to give me the flexibility, then I would hope that you could amend the motion and pass that so that I have the flexibility to modify the bag limit.
So be it. Commissioner McKenzie.
I'd like to amend the motion to provide the staff the flexibility on the adult bag limit for Chinook and Coho to optimize in the best way they see fit towards the goal, achieving the goal of the 20% or less.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Mr. Kehoe, second. Okay, we will now vote on the second amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Very good.
Going to vote on the original.
You want to do it on the control zone, or you just leave it be?
The motion is amended.
I'm sorry?
Right, he's going to do
it. The main motion.
Call for the question, please.
Okay. Regarding the original motion put forward by Commissioner Grayville and seconded by Commissioner Thorburn.
As amended.
As amended twice. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Thank you.